You're listening to Stateside on Michigan Radio. I'm Zoe Clark, in for Cynthia Canty.
My failure. My divorce.
I felt totally bamboozled.
And I thought, this has to end. I can't do this anymore.
And now we turn to a story of failure from Failure Lab in Detroit. Here's Andwele Gardner, better known by his stage name, Dwele.
If you can't tell by my flip phone, the year is now 2002. That was my manager calling to tell me that the interviewer that's, you know, working for the magazine that's featuring me, they're going to be about 10 minutes late, so that gives me like 8 minutes to get you caught up on my life right now in 2002. So, 1997, I used to work at a travel company / insurance company. We'll call them Triple J. I worked in the mail room, and I was an envelope engineer. They knew how to keep us feeling good. But when I worked in the mail room, I used to always wear a pair of headphones. And finally, one day, one of my coworkers came up to me, and she said, "Why are you always wearing headphones?" I said, "Oh, I make music." She said, "Can I hear it?" "Sure." So she's listening. "Is this you singing?" "Yes." "Who did the music?" "I did the music." "Oh, we got ourselves a regular Prince in the mailroom, y'all." "Oh, why, thank you." I'm just out here. I don't know what I'm talking about. I was a very inquisitive child, and my parents found out early that I had an affinity for music. So they would always bring me around instruments and things like that. But I remember this one story, not because my mother used to tell it like every year, but because I was there. I was five. But I remember this one story where they bought me a harmonica, and I sat in their room, and I played the harmonica for a couple of minutes, and I started playing Mary Had a Little Lamb. My father was like, "Hey, Phil, I think we got us a regular Prince on our hands." I was like, "Thank you, Daddy." But I was always into instruments. And one Christmas, they bought me a toy organ. And my father, who was a doctor by trade, he played organ in the church. And so he would always teach me a few chords. And I had a chord book, so I'd show him what I learned. And we know we go back and forth, and we just had a moment. You know, that was our thing. We did that. And then one day he left. He pulled out the driveway, went across the street, pulled into the driveway across the way from us. That was my play uncle's house. He got out, went to the backyard with my play uncle. I thought nothing of it. Just stopped to say, "Hey." So I went back to watching TV. A few minutes later, I hear pop, pop. I get up, I go to the window, I look outside. I see my play uncle's neighbor with a shotgun in his hand. Second round, pop, pop. And then he walks into the house. I think nothing of it. He's shooting at a raccoon, a possum. We get those in the neighborhood. I went back to watching TV. It was roughly about an hour, hour and a half later. I see lights coming through the window. So I peek through the blinds and I see an ambulance. And I see my father's car in the driveway running. The next thing I remember after that was just family being over in the house. I was around 9 years old, 9, 10 years old. In no way am I a psychiatrist. But one thing I was that day was a builder. I built a wall so tall and so wide that it was impossible for anybody to get in. And I lost my voice. I didn't know how to speak. And I know with this Failure Lab, they tell us, you know, live inside the negative, live inside the failure. Don't speak on the positive. But one positive thing that came out of that was I found music. In finding music, I found my voice. If there was something that was on my heart, I figured out how to put it into a chord. If it was something that I wanted to get across to somebody, I found out how to evoke that through a word. And I did this through life. This is what I did. And I did it for me. It was my medicine. But, you know, my family knew about it. My closest friends knew about it. And eventually my coworkers. So they all got together and they said, you know, you should put something out. See how people feel about your music. So I did that. I made 100 tapes. I'm not telling my age here. I sold 100 tapes in 1 week. I made $800. You could not tell me that I was not a platinum selling artist. I'm on top of the world right now. I am looking forward to the future. With that album, I met a group from Detroit called Slum Village, home to the legendary Jay Dilla, who introduced me to management. The management came to me and they said, you got a nice project. We can shop it, you know, and see what happens. So I sat myself down. I said, Dwayne, you can try this. If it works, ride it out. If it doesn't, just go back to being a envelope engineer. So I did it. But before I left Triple J, my manager at the time, my boss, pulled me into her office. She closed the door and she said, Dwayne, what are you doing? Do you really think that you're going to go out there and make music and make a living from making music? Do you know how many people are out here trying to rap right now? This is not going to work. I can't believe you're giving everything up just to chase a dream. First of all, I'm a singer. Secondly, thank you. That's what I needed. Now I'm not only doing it for me, I'm doing it to prove you wrong. So I jumped. But when I got into the industry, it was at a weird time. You know, the industry was changing, and the label that signed me, which we'll call Persian Records, the label was going through a change. They were merging with another big label, and whenever you have a big merger like that, they have to let people go. And that was the situation with me. The people that actually brought me into the label, that had the vision for my music and for my look and what they wanted to do, they let them go. So now what happens is this big label pulls somebody from country western, somebody from over here in alternative, and somebody from rock. They put them together. They say, this is your artist. Put a marketing scheme together. Make it work. And they're looking at each other like, we don't know what the hell. Who is this guy? What is he? What is it, rap? What is this? So they're confused. And this kept happening to me month after month after month for like a year and a half. And it was pretty rough. But then finally, you know, we actually reached a point to the point that I had an album. I had an A&R. And my A&R says, all right, this is what we're going to do. I got a guy in New York. He can mix and master your album. He's done this, that, and the other for such and such. He has such amount of Grammys. He'll get it together, send it back to you. Everything will be good. Then all we have to do is wait for a drop date. My manager steps up and says, no, this is my artist. He created the music. He laid every vocal. He knows his music. He's going out there with the music, and he'll sit down with him and make sure everything is the way it's supposed to be. My A&R says, okay, cool. I'll give you a call in about a week, and we'll set it up. That week came and passed, and I say a couple days after that, we got an envelope in the mail. We pulled it out. It was a CD. We put it in. After about 3 songs, we realized that this was the mixed and mastered version of my first album, and it sounded like doo-doo. It was horrible. Main vocals were down here. Background vocals were up here. Tings were over here. Tongs over there. It was the untrained ear could listen to it and say, oh, that's bullshit. It was bad. A couple days later, we got the invoice, a little over $80,000 to mix and master the album. So now I'm at a point in time in my life where the money is dwindling. I don't have a name for myself yet, so nobody's going to book me. They don't know me. I can't put out music, which is what I initially got into it to do. So what do? I'm stuck. So I create an alias. Now my name is Dwele, D-W-E-L-E. My alias name was Elude because I was eluding the label. E-L-E-U-U-D.
Ooh, the boy is killing him. That boy is working with his brain up there.
Until I got that piece of paper in the mail, cease and desist or you will get sued. Shut that down. Yeah, I got a lot of stories like that. That's my door, excuse me. That's probably the interviewer.
Hey, Dwele, what's going on, man? Everything good? I'm just going to set up my recorder, a couple questions, and then we're out of there.
Okay, so how's everything going? How's everything working out with you?
Oh, everything's beautiful, man. We finally got the album mixed, mastered. We're great.
Cool. So there's something going on in the industry. I hear, you know, a little buzz about this new guy named Elude.
Come on, man. It sounds just like you. Do you know this guy? What do you know about him?
Nothing.
Come on, bro. You know something.
I know nothing.
I got you. I get it. Okay, last but not least, there's rumors in the industry that Persian Records, they're letting go of artists. So how is this affecting you?
I haven't heard anything about that. It's not affecting me. We're good. We're just waiting for the drop date. We're okay. I'm okay.
Well, that's great, man. Well, look, best of luck to you. I got what I need. Thank you very much. Best of luck.
Dropping artists? This can't be happening to me. I've done all this to get here to be dropped. Could I have done something different? Maybe I should have listened to my boss when she said, don't do it. Maybe I could have broke down that wall and I could have spoke up when I saw $80,000 worth of shit going wrong. But I know one thing, right here, right now, in 2002, the last thing I want to do, and the thing that I'm dreading, is going back to my boss and saying, you were right. I need my job back. And right here, right now, in 2002, I am not looking forward to the future. Thank you.
That was Andwele telling his story of failure, and Failure Lab is coming to Michigan State University on April 1st. You can learn more about our partners, Failure Lab, and snag some tickets to East Lansing's show at failure-lab.com.